on DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
This is 5 Live.
Let me just let people know which films we've got. It's lovely to meet you, by the
and
way,
you.
Doctor. It's a privilege. You will be appalled at my lack of movie knowledge.
No, I've been doing
that's
the show
why
with,
you're here.
I've been doing this show with Mayo for years. He knows nothing either.
Well, he pretends he does, very convincingly. Right, The Boat That Rocked, Monsters, that's a good start, isn't it? Monsters versus Aliens.
Which you've seen.
I have seen, 3D. I go to all the 3D films. The last adult film I saw, well, PG-15 or whatever, not adult.
Yes, I just wondered where that was going.
No, Jackie Smith saw anything. Was Quantum of Solace, the big screening that I saw you at, actually. You're in the front row standing up a lot.
Was I?
Before the movie started.
Oh,
yes.
No. That wasn't standing. Yeah, not during the
posturing.
Movie.
I
was sitting.
I was meeting,
because you have to understand that when they have the James Bond screening, every film critic goes to that, because that was the big multimedia screening. It was in Leicester Square. So consequently, before the movie, there's an awful lot of, oh, hello, Alan Jones, hello, Kim Newman, hello, Nigel Floyd, hello, Bob, because we haven't seen each other for ages. And then we sit down, watch Quantum of...
And ended up completely confused and underwhelmed.
Well, funnily enough, I was at that screening with Simon, and we came out of it, and there was a silence as to which one of us was going to say first, was it just me, or did you not understand and not care? I mean, that was the worst thing, and I really, really liked Casino Royale, and I really liked Daniel Craig.
I think
he's actually the best Bond. I think he's better than Sean Connery.
No, I'm with you on that. I find him mesmerising, actually.
He's a proper actor. But the fact is that in Quantum of Solace, silly title, no story, no memorable... How does the theme tune go?
It's very trendy, though. I remember.
No,
was it? Was that what it was supposed to be?
It made me think that the Duran Duran theme tune was in fact a masterpiece that I had previously overlooked. But no, it's totally unmemorable. No one-liners. You know, no memorable love interest. I mean, actually, the point being that he's meant to be grieving after Casino Royale, but there wasn't even much sense of grief. There was just a lot of running around. And then the villain turned out to be an estate agent.
Do you know, this is quite timely, because it's out on DVD, isn't it? I wondered where it is out on DVD.
It's just come out on DVD. And of course, no matter what anybody says, it will absolutely fly off the shelves. I'm sure it's number one in the DVD charts already. It's also available on Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray will have hours and hours of features, which still won't make the movie any good. And it's a shame because I do think there is life in the Bond franchise. I just think they dropped the ball with Quantum of Solace quite badly.
Yeah, they undersold Daniel, didn't they, really? Okay, now there's a message for Jason Isaacs, who I know is probably your biggest fan here on a Friday afternoon. It's from Karen Stenner. She says, could you channel my apologies to Jason Isaacs as I rudely interrupted a conversation between him and, here's another pronunciation, is it Viggo or Viggo?
Viggo Mortensen.
It is Viggo Mortensen. At a London preview of the film Good, and she interrupted Jason so that she could give Viggo a present. For my part, says Karen, this was extremely worthwhile because Viggo was delighted with his gift and gave me a kiss on the cheek. Karen Stenner just started PhD. Clearly not in etiquette, I'd suggest, if she interrupted poor Jason like that.
Well, there's a tradition in which we have to say hello to Jason Isaacs, and we have to give him a little moment, because wherever Jason is in the world and he listens to the podcast, he says hello back. So you have to have a moment of silence. So hello to Jason Isaacs.
Hello to Jason.
No, silence.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm only being polite.
Behave. Right. Let's do it again. Hello to Jason Isaacs. And apologies, as you were.
How come I didn't get to say hello to him?
Because he's my mate.
Oh, right. Okay.
As long as we're clear on that.
I'll be polite. You didn't tell me that we were live streaming on the web as well. I've got no makeup on.
Me neither. And believe me, it's a lot more.
You can get away with it.
Funnily enough, when I saw In the Loop with Alistair Campbell, the day before, I walked into a door. You know, a glass door that's meant to open, and it didn't. Yeah. I went boom, and I walked straight into it, and I split my nose up. I've broken it. And I had to put all this makeup on in order that when I did the interview, it didn't look like I'd just been in a fight. And Alistair Campbell said to me, he said, what's happened to your face? I said, well, I walked into a door yesterday, but I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the interview with you, and then at the end of it, I'm going to take all the makeup off. I'm just going to tell everybody you hit me.
So, how did he receive
that? Oh, he was very good. Well, I mean, you know, obviously, I think he... You know, he I think he's been round the block so many times there's almost nothing he hasn't heard of. And I think there was a moment when he wondered whether, you know, are they really going to do that? Oh, no, that's fine. But then he wrote a thing on his blog that said, I'd said that I was going to do this, as if to correct the impression that, just to be absolutely certain, he hadn't hit me.
All right, let David from Frankfurt has emailed in, and because he's from Frankfurt, I think we can make time for him. It's a hell of an effort, isn't it?
It's like a blanket for anyone from Frankfurt.
Not really, no. It's just that he's made the effort to do it, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just as much effort wherever you are. You know, it's sending an email, it doesn't matter. Well, you could be in Antarctica, it's the same effort.
I don't know. I think it takes... No, I'll tell you what takes more effort. To tune in to Five Live if you're living in Frankfurt. So, therefore, we're rewarding
Internet.
Yeah, I know, but you still have to make the effort to do it. It's not as easy as the radio. Now, love the the wittertainment, he says, but it did occur to me that the fun of backflips should not be limited to movies.
Uh-huh.
What about your own show, Mark and Simon, I should think he's referring to, certainly not me. Try this for starters. Two men on the radio rush very fast to name the week's best movie release, often without even giving a review, so that they can get on to reviewing the inferior big-budget ones before launching into the main event, a lengthy and digression-rich rundown of the box office top 10 in decreasing order of popularity.
Perfectly fair.
Perfectly fair.
Yeah,
fair.
We've never sorted that out. It's absolutely true.
Which leads us very nicely into the box office top 10 in decreasing order of popularity, starting off at number 10. With The Young Victorian.
Which I like very much. I mean, I think it's a good performance by Emily Blunt. It's a good story about a young woman finding her way through her intelligence and her wit and her political savvy and nous. And, if you have a 12-year-old daughter, take her along to see it. Because not only do I think it's a handsomely made film, I think it's a good role model film.
At number 9, Watchmen.
And filmed at the Zack Snyder. Were you ever a fan of the Watchmen comic?
No, well, what do you think, honestly?
Well, no, but funnily enough, I know that the general thing is that anyone who reads graphic novels
Bunty,
is a 17-year-old.
Twinkle, you could name
fine.
It.
Tammy.
No, it wasn't the Tammy. Jackie Girl I was.
Oh,
yeah.
No, didn't like Tammy. I liked Tammy because there was a couple of supernatural stories in Tammy. There was one called Lil Waters Runs Deep, which was a sort of ghostly story. Anyway, Watchmen, I'd rather have seen the movie of Tammy, to be honest. I mean, the thing with Zack Snyder is all his films just look like he's interested in the costumes, but nothing else.
Tom from Shrewsbury says, "Dear Fop and Dapper Dan, I caught Watchmen this week, haven't read the comic nor even seen the trailer, thoroughly enjoyed it and followed the plot despite Mark's concerns.
Yes.
Fully agree with his assessment that it didn't go into as much depth as it could have done with regard to some of the themes raised, with the caveat of some sore body parts. I will be recommending it to friends." This is Tom from Shrewsbury, BSc Economics, International Politics and Intelligence Studies.
Well, you understand this is because we demanded that in order to...
Fine.
So this is, but intelligence studies. That's what.
That's like, what I was explaining.
Like artificial intelligence.
Well, it's a bit like media studies, isn't it? I guess.
take that back immediately. Media studies is a very fine endeavour.
Do you know I have an honorary MA for services to broadcasting?
Did you know,
awarded last year.
Simon Mayo has an honorary doctorate, which I refuse to recognise because it's honorary and it's not real. You don't need an honorary MA for services to broadcasting. You're a top broadcaster. What do you need an honorary MA for?
But it's nice.
Did you wear the thing?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And I got to sit through the whole ceremony, proud parents in the audience and all that. Not mine, clearly, but the other students who'd actually worked for their MAs. Right, number 8, Lesbian Vampire Killers.
Which is not as funny as it ought to be or as funny as the title suggests, but it is funnier than Zombie Strippers, but it's pretty lame. It looks good, though.
Spoke to Mike Lee earlier on, and he has advised James Corden to do nothing for a while.
Yes, I mean, funnily enough, there is real sense in that. You know, don't overexpose yourself. And the problem with Lesbian Vampire Killers is it's got an awful lot of publicity, but not an awful lot else. The strange thing as well is that they've gone out of their way to make it look like a proper Hammer movie, and yet the script is just, you know, the kind of lowest common denominator gags for those two guys. And I think both of them are funny. I think both of them could do a lot better than this.
7, Gran Torino.
Well, I'm a big Clint Eastwood fan. Clint Eastwood is one of those people who makes working really hard look absolutely effortless. And he makes movies that are, you know, both sort of philosophical and theological and political, but they don't look like it. They just look like good, entertaining movies. I thought it was great. And as I've said before, I think the reason it was overlooked for the awards is that he doesn't look like he's trying. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't. I told you, the last film I've seen, which we'll talk about later on, actually,
okay.
Monsters vs. Aliens.
Yeah.
I only see children's films. This is from Stephen. Hi, Rents and Begbie. I I saw Gran Torino recently and went to get into Eastwood's back catalogue. My local video shop is selling collector's editions of Clint's work with Sergio Leone, etc. He's having a look at the Dollars trilogy. Yep. Can Mark comment on what is the best Clint Eastwood movie besides Gran Torino, and which is the best film of Clint's with, this is another pronunciation, it's Sergio Leone, yeah, isn't it?
I mean, I think, to be honest, the best Clint Eastwood movie is Unforgiven. And I mean, did you see Million Dollar Baby? Which again, I mean, I think that's a much more interesting film than perhaps it was given credit for. But funnily enough, I saw Unforgiven again not so long ago, and it really does hold up. And as far as the Leonis are concerned, I mean, they're pretty much of a muchness, but in a way, the best of the Leonis is Unforgiven, because Unforgiven is a film about that heritage. And you look at Unforgiven, and it's like him looking at his entire back catalogue and sort of reassessing it. And I think that's a magnificent piece of work, that film.
Well, you know the year it won all the Oscars. Can't remember which year that is.
That was the year that I put my bets on the Oscars and famously won really badly.
Oh. What, did you put them on?
Yeah, I didn't understand what an accumulator was. I picked five winners. I didn't understand what an accumulator was. I won something like £150, whereas if I'd known the word accumulator, I could have bought my house.
Well, do you know, I was at those Oscars. Can't remember when they were. Yeah,
they would have been Hollywood.
When they were. I knew where they were. But I spoke to Richard Harris, who was in Unforgiven, and I was going on about the movie, and he just looked at me and said, "You haven't seen it, have you?" And I actually hadn't seen it, because I'd been in Britain where it wasn't released before. And he was really cross with me, and I'll never forget that. It was one of those awful interviews. It was live as well, where I was talking about Unforgiven, and he just glared at me and said, "You haven't seen it."
But had you attempted to imply to him that you had?
Yes. Well, I thought I sounded very knowledgeable, but clearly I didn't.
The way around that is simply to ask the particular actor in question, you know, this is the best role of your career, isn't it? Yeah. And then they'll just talk forever.
But I was trying to prove that I knew something when, in fact, I didn't. I've made a career out of it, funnily enough.
No, but I think, again, getting on the wrong side of Richard Harris must have been quite scary.
It was, yeah. And then, subsequently, I know this is going on, I was in New York one year to interview some movie star, and I went into a restaurant, and he was in there with his son having a high old time in the corner. He just went to the other end of the restaurant so he didn't spot me. Anyway. R.I.P. Richard Harris. He's a hell of a character.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Where have we got to? Number six, Duplicity.
Which is, you know, throwaway and lightweight in a way that it shouldn't be, considering the director's previous works. He made Michael Clayton. I quite like Julia Roberts. I quite like Clive Owen. The problem with it is it's just too flippant to sustain itself for the length of time that it lasts, but it's okay.
Dom is studying a BA Honours in World Music at the University of Leeds. He went to see Duplicity, thought it was great. I love a good thriller, Hitchcock being the best, of course, he says. However, I did get the sense that the film was trying to be too complicated and too clever just for the sake of being complicated and clever.
Yes, it is. But, yeah. It is exactly that.
Okay, right. And then he went on to say, "Does Dr. K agree with me?"
Yeah, yes, I do.
Clearly, you do. Yeah, right. And at number five, The Damned United.
I know nothing about football. I like the film very much. I thought Michael Sheen was really terrific. There has been some question about whether or not the Brian Clough, as portrayed in the novel of The Damned United, is a hideous distortion of the truth. In the film, he comes across as, I have to say, heroic, likable, and engaging.
Yeah, I met Brian Clough once.
Oh, really?
Actually,
and
in the 70s.
Was he heroic, likable, and engaging?
Yeah. Yes. Well, he's a character. He's brilliant, and football needs people like him. Jim Bob from Watford says, "After watching The Damned United, it dawned on me that Michael Sheen has brilliantly portrayed two national heroes and one national demon." That must be Tony Blair, the demon, surely. Or maybe it was Brian Clough, I don't know. "This led me to ponder what the most challenging British historical figure for Michael Sheen to play could be. What does the good doctor think?"
You have to give me 5 minutes on that. Who could be more challenging than playing Tony Blair?
Well, he suggested Princess Diana.
I don't think Michael Sheen could do that. But, I mean, I may be speaking out of turn. Yeah, no, maybe he could, actually. Maybe he could. Although, have you seen in the Underworld movies when he takes it, he's what do you call it, ripped, I think is the word. Yeah. He's a very manly man.
Yes, he is,
yes,
actually.
I don't think
he's... There's the Welsh in him, I think. At number four, Paul Blart, Mole Cop.
Rubbish, 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 and rubbish. And then my little boy went to see it, and it's... rubbish.
Rubbish, as the name implies. Pretty unimaginative, isn't it? At number three, The Haunting in Connecticut.
One of those weird cases in which we weren't shown this film. It wasn't press screened. It turns out to be perfectly adequate, you know, middle of the road horror movie. I just don't understand why it wasn't shown to us. I mean, you know, I've seen far worse movies that were press screened. I had to pay to go and see it. It was just very workaday.
And number two, Marley and Me,
which is awful. Do you have a dog?
No, I don't actually, but I'd almost get one just to avoid seeing the movie.
That's
I think.
It. That's it. That,
right.
There we go.
Right.
Now that's it. Now we can be best friends. That's exactly the right answer. Don't see Marley and Me. You know, give a dog a home.
And now I'm finding out why you said that, because John, Kirsten, Angus, and Finlay have said, I wanted to tell you about Finlay. So obviously it's either John or Kirsten who's telling me this. I wanted to tell you about Finlay, my 6-year-old son's take on Marley and Me.
Okay.
He's willingly not gone to the film after hearing his older brother Angus's rendition of Mark's rant about not attending the film and instead taking your dog for a walk.
Yes, good. Excellent. That's exactly the thing you should be doing, and your dog will love you for it.
However, Finlay has decided to write his own version, apparently. He writes, one day Jenny decided she wanted a dog, so they went and bought one and called it Marley. 10 years later, Marley died, and Jenny said it was the best thing for him to die. The end.
That's pretty much what happens in the film.
Well done, Finlay, and well done, Angus, for inspiring it. And at number one, but according to all the correspondence we've received, goodness knows how, is Knowing.
Old Horse Face goes in at number one, and Nick Cage. Nick Cage described in the press notes as the most versatile actor of all time, which is really pushing a point. I mean, it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, despite the fact that M. Night Shyamalan isn't involved in it. It's one of those movies that he ought to have made. It's actually by Alex Proyas. I didn't think it was that terrible. I thought it was a sort of throwback 70s movie that had at least the strength of its convictions. Nick Cage is all over the place and does that kind of sleepwalking honk performance that he just does when he's not trying very hard. And it's not a surprise that it's gone in at number one. It'll drop off pretty quickly. But, you know, I have seen far worse sci-fi movies this year. I mean, The Day the Earth Stood Still with Keanu, and which was absolutely...
You don't like him, I know that.
No, I think he's great in some things. I think he's great in Bill and Ted. I thought he was terrific in Point Break. I mean, when he's playing an airheaded surfer, he's really good. It's just when he's playing an alien intelligence from another planet that knows more than anyone on Earth could ever know, I look at Keanu Reeves and I think, Johnny Mnemonic, really?
He doesn't give good interview either, does he?
Keanu. No. Did you let me? No, because he's let you know. Actually, funnily enough, I did once interview him on stage. And I have to say, he was nice. He was pleasant. Mm. Yes. Nice and
just
pleasant.
Dull.
Just not. Yes, exactly. I was attempting to not say that word, but thank you for leaping
you
in. Well done, yes.
Shall we move on?
Yes, shall we?
The movie reviews at... This must be a record at 20 to 4, is it?
I think we've got to after the quarter past, but let's not do that now. Let's leap in. Boat That Rocked. New film written and directed by Richard Curtis, who I think it is generally accepted is a better writer than director. The story is about, it's a pop comedy about the heady days of pirate radio, inspired by, but clearly, crucially, not based on the true story of the pirates. I mean, there was a point before the BBC was, you know, had a proper pop station in which it was only broadcasting a very small amount of pop music, so the pirates were operating outside of the law, not breaking the law, but operating outside of the law by broadcasting in, I think it counts as international waters, doesn't it? And Richard Curtis has sort of dreamed up this confection in which what you have is a boat in that pre... in the period before the pirates were all kind of late. Actually, the thing that really knocked the pirates out was the existence of Radio 1, because once proper pop radio started, and that's, you know, an awful lot of them went there. So what you have is a boat with a bunch of characters on it who are essentially Bill Nye, who's the kind of lanky, louche character who's in charge of everything. You have Philip Seymour Hoffman, who's doing a character who's very much like the Emperor Roscoe. I mean, one of the things I was doing in the movie, which I understand you shouldn't do, but was looking at all the people and trying to match them up with people that you actually knew. There's a character played by Ralph Brown, who's clearly sort of slightly Whispering Bob, because he's a late night DJ.
And Whispering Bob is still broadcasting.
No, absolutely. And clearly, Whispering Bob isn't based on the character that's in the boat, because the character in the boat that rocked, because, you know, is really, really far out there. But his voice, he's in the late night one, and he broadcasts like that. And then there's Nick Frost's libidinous Dr. Dave. And the story is, at the beginning of the movie, a young boy is put onto the boat because he's been thrown out of school for being involved in drugs. And he goes to see Bill Nye, who's going to set him on the straight and narrow. And Bill Nye says, it's a terrible idea. We can do anything but the straight and narrow here. And the rest of the film is a sort of celebration of the anarchic life of all these DJs on this boat. While meanwhile, back on land, Kenneth Branagh is the minister who's trying to close down all the pirate radios. And he's trying to do it with the aid of an assistant. Now, have you seen this film?
No, No,
I'm just going to point this out. So, you know, in Blackadder, one of the central jokes in Blackadder is a character called Darling, right? Mm-hmm. Darling. So, you know, people say, come over here, Darling, and we'll do this together, Darling, and, you know, you'll be fine. Key joke in The Boat That Rocked is there is a character whose name is, and I'm going to spell it because I understand it, is T-W-A-double-T.
Okay.
And I'm just for obvious reasons, I'm not going to say it out loud. That is a central gag. Now, I'm going to play you a clip now that involves a meeting between Bill Nighy and that character, in which I believe we've taken out his name.
His name.
This is when the
Even
character...
Even though it's a double T at the end.
It is, but in the end, it doesn't matter which way you spell it, does it? Let's be honest. Here's the clip.
Hello. Can I help you?
Oh, yes. Hello. Got a bit lost.
More than a bit. In order to get here, you have to open a really quite heavy door with the words no entry on it.
Well, I didn't see that, so it must have been left open.
You look suspiciously square to be a fan of this boat's output.
No, I'm a real fan.
I hope so, because if word gets out that you're here to spy on us, I think you may have trouble hanging into your testicles.
Are you threatening me?
Do you know, I think I am, because I've got pretty good instincts in me.
Get out of here!
Now, it comes down an awful lot, whether you like this movie or not, to whether you find the central joke about the character who isn't called Darling funny. Now, you see, you're doing exactly what most of the people in the cinema did.
Yeah,
you see.
I think the music would have saved it, though, possibly, would it? No,
well, no,
clearly
but
not.
I did find it funny. Now, here's the funny thing.
Dear.
Richard Curtis... No, I'm sorry, and I know I'm out of step with this. Richard Curtis, I think... There is no way of saying that Richard Curtis is a great director. I think he's a wonderful screenwriter. I think he's not a brilliant director. His films are very baggy and disorganised. You look at Love Actually.
Which he also wrote and directed.
And mm-hmm. Crucially, he directed. And it's kind of all over the place, and it rambles all over the place. And in fact, there's an entire subplot that was taken out of it. And when you look at The Boat That Rocked, which is long, it's over 2 hours, and it still looks like there's bits that they've left out. Characters get invoked, they never appear again. Somebody mentions something, it's never followed up. And the thing looks like it's thrown together like a bit of a sort of meringue. You know, it's just grown of its own accord. And I understand that structurally, obviously what he needs is to sit down in a room with Roger Corman, the famous American producer, who said that no movie would not benefit from losing a quarter of its running time. And... That's what it needs. Now, that is true. I also understand that the film is completely fallacious in terms of any sense of reality. I mean, it's a fantasy. It's really not based on anything. But although it doesn't say that it is. I mean, I know they've got in people to act as advisors who really were involved in pirate radio. And so there has been some sort of hint of authenticity, but it's nothing other than a hint. And I also understand that some of the writing, perhaps some people would say, is not Richard Curtis's best. But I sat there in a screening in which it was going down fairly badly, and I have to tell you this, I started laughing, and the first time they said that guy's name, I laughed out loud into the silence of the room, and I was laughing at the movie, and I knew things wrong with it, structurally it's all over the place, and it's a mess, but I started laughing, and I started smiling, and then a part of me went, hang about a minute, the reason you're laughing and smiling is essentially you like the idea of Richard Curtis, you think Richard Curtis is a genuinely good man, and you like the movie because you like him. So then I did an experiment. I thought, okay, I'm going to imagine that this movie is directed by Guy Ritchie. I'm going to try and look at it as if it's there, and you know what, it didn't work, because and I promise you this, I know all the things that are wrong with the film. I know that if you held it up in front of an army full of film students, they'd explain to you structurally this, character-wise that. I can't believe he called that character that. It's got 59 endings and none of them work. None of these things come together. But you know what? I sat there and I grinned, and my face was grinning, and I was feeling good, and I was laughing, and I was enjoying it, and I remembered something, which is that my wife went to America, and... she got off the plane the other day.
She went to America.
No, she said, you know what I did on the plane? She said, I watched Love Actually 3 times back to back. And there's a bit in one of the Nick Hornby novels when he says buying a present for somebody you love is not buying them a record that you like, it's buying them a record that they would like. Like in High Fidelity, she says, when you bought me that Lionel Richie record, that was doing something you want. So I ended up buying Love Actually for Linda. And of course, since then, I've watched it again after having, you know, given it a bit of a kicking for being all over the place. And you know what? It does have genuine wit and charm. And the thing with The Boat That Rocked is, I don't care what's wrong with it. I promise you, I sat there and I really tried to put myself in the position of somebody who actively didn't like the filmmaker, and I couldn't take the smile off my face. And I didn't laugh as much as I've laughed in some of the for example, Four Weddings, but I laughed solidly and consistently enough, and I had a tear in my eye in the right place enough to say, you know what? I liked the film, despite whilst the rational part of my head was going, all these things are wrong. My heart was going, you know what, though? I'm going with it.
And it wasn't because of Richard Curtis's skill as a writer and director. It was because of the effect that Richard Curtis has had on Mrs. Kermode. That's what it all boils down to.
No, you're misinterpreting me. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying I like it because Linda likes Love Actually. I'm not saying that at all. I like it despite, take everything else away. Okay. I'm saying when you just look at it, the fact of the matter is, for me, it worked. Now, I know that for some people it doesn't, and I know that some hardened film critics have been a little bit stiff on it. The fact of the matter is, it's a comedy. I laughed. It's an uplifting story. I was uplifted. There were bits that are meant to be tear-jerking. You know what? I had a little cry.
Yeah.
And I embraced it. I promise you, I really tried hard to say, OK, imagine that it's made by somebody you don't like and will it still work? And that was the test for me. And I imagined it being made by Guy Ritchie. And the next minute, somebody said the name of that guy and I laughed like a foghorn going off in the middle of the Irish Sea.
Even though, according to some, it was a lazy piece of writing that wasn't ready to go into production.
You know what? The thing is... I'm not going to fight any of those cases because I know I can already see the torrent of emails coming in saying all these things. I know it's film unmaking 101, but I can't tell you that I didn't like it.
It's the Richard Curtis effect. That's what it is, isn't it? Kay says, I saw a trailer for Boat That Rocked months ago on DVD and thought, why didn't they call it Rock the Boat? Makes more sense. Saw a trailer for it on telly last week and it looked like a totally different film, more like Brit rom-com.
Well, it is a Brit rom-com.
Yeah, well, exactly. Thanks, Kay, for stating the obvious.
That's going to get that in there, yeah. But I really want to be clear on this because it's important. I didn't like it because of Richard Curtis. I liked it because of what it was, which obviously is a product of it being...
Because it had a man called T-W-A-T-T in it.
That's one of the things. And also, Kenneth Branagh is just true. I mean, I could watch Kenneth Branagh. And there's a fantastic... Emma Thompson. Honestly, if Emma Thompson put a paper bag on her head and read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, I would turn up to watch it because that woman is magnificent.
John from Hereford says... Lyndon Alexander says, Love Actually is rubbish. You were right the first time. Stop now. And John from Hereford says, exactly right about Love Actually, just very watchable despite it all. A great film.
And there is a moment in Love Actually when Emma Thompson realises that the present that she saw Alan Rickman buying is not for her, and she goes off into a room and she has a moment on her own. And I'm sorry, that stands up with the great drama moments of any British movie of the last 20 years. I know all the things that are wrong, but that scene is wonderful. And I'm sorry, what can I say? It just absolutely worked for me. I tell you, there's a funny thing as well. There was a quite sniffy review of the film in the paper today, and it said, one of the characters is called T-W-A-T-T, and it said, and believe me, that joke is every bit as funny on screen as it is written down. And reading it on the train, I laughed out loud. I thought, that's it. Sorry, I can't.
There's no swaying you. And that was about the boat that rocks.
Yes.
Not Love, actually, which we've been talking about as well. How very confusing.
They're connected thematically.
They are, exactly.
Yes.
The only two films written and directed by Richard Curtis, who really taps into the human condition. I think that's what his huge skill is.
He does. But
it?
If Guy Ritchie had made that movie, I still would have loved it. That's it. There we go.
Yeah, right. Let's move on to the big Easter movie, Monsters versus Aliens. I took my two little boys, the 3D version,
yes.
After having watched Bolt, the 3D version. They loved it a lot more than Bolt, and they compared it to nearly as good as The Incredibles, but only nearly.
Okay, and an interesting thing with The Incredibles, I thought there were hints in Monsters vs. Aliens, we'll have a clip in just a moment, of Brad Bird's best movie, which is The Iron Giant, which he made before The Incredibles, which I still think... Have you seen it?
I've seen The Incredibles, haven't seen it.
No, The Iron Giant is the one, so you get it on DVD. I still think it's Brad Bird's best work. The story here is that there's a young woman voiced by Reese Witherspoon. On the day of her wedding, she is exposed to quantonium, which turns her into basically 50-foot woman. She is then taken off to a government compound where they have been keeping all monsters since World War II.
Not all brides.
No. Well, yeah, so she's called... I think they call her Ginormica, and there's a whole bunch of other monsters. Hugh Laurie doing a kind of, a bug cockroachy thing, and then there's Seth Rogen as a blobby thing. Anyway, then what happens is the Earth is invaded by aliens, and the only thing the American government can do is to get the monsters who they've been keeping, tied up to go and fight the robots. Here's a clip.
3 weeks ago, if you had asked me to defeat a giant alien robot, I would have said no can do. But I did it. Me. I'm so buzzing. I mean, did you see how strong I was? There probably isn't a jar in this world I can't open.
You were positively heroic, my dear. I especially loved how you saved all those people on the bridge. It was a nice touch. Wasn't she amazing, Link?
Yeah, she was great. Really cool. Loved it.
Oh, poor Link. After all that tough talk, you were out monstered by a girl. No wonder you're depressed.
Hey, I'm not depressed. I'm tired.
Why are you tired? You didn't do anything.
Well, I haven't been sleeping well, all right? I got sleep apnea. Whatever, it's not fun.
So Link's a little rusty. I mean, sleep deprived. You'll be back to your old self in no time. And so will I.
What happened to the "there isn't a jar in the world I can't open" stuff? Wait, did you find a jar you couldn't open? What was in it? Was there pickles in it? Where's the giant jar of pickles?
What my associate is trying to say is that we all think the new Susan is the cat's meow. I'm sorry.
Aw, thanks, you guys. That is so sweet.
Hugh Laurie doing
Hugh Laurie.
Which is funny because in America he's now famous for being
House,
in which he doesn't do Hugh Laurie, right? In which he plays an American character
with an odd accent.
Have you seen House?
No, I haven't.
No, me neither. But I believe that he does play. But he's meant to be fairly convincing as an American. No?
Yeah, although there have been sort of criticisms about his accent, but it's still really popular.
Yeah,
so
incredibly popular. Anyway, yeah. So there he is as a Dr. Cockroach alongside Seth Rogen's Blob and Will Arnett's Missing Link. Now, here's the things you need to know. Firstly, the whole thing with 3D, which is really kicking off, as we all know, is that in the end, it comes down to piracy, I think. The reason that we're being told by Hollywood that the great reason that everyone has to go in 3D is because you can't pirate 3D movies, at least not at the moment. And I'm still not entirely convinced that 3D is the future. In the case of Bolt, they tried really hard to be immersive. The immersive, you know, the 3D was drawing you in. Now, In the case of Monsters vs. Aliens, they're not having any of that. It starts off with somebody batting a ball backwards, which, of course, is a reference to the House of Wax, the Andre the Toth movie, which is one of the very famous 3D movies. You look back at the history of 3D, you start off with like Buona Devil, which offered you a lion in your lap, and then you get House of Wax and Kiss Me Kate and Dial In for Murder, and then later on we get the Friday the 13th and the Jaws 3D, but they're all to do with pointing.
Why did that reference completely go over my head?
The House of Wax. Well, it's, I mean, because in a way, one of the things that the movie is doing is it is cine literate. It is referring back to things like Iron Giant. It is referring back to things like House of Wax, and it's not doing it in the honkingly awful way that some movies, like if you look at Shark Tale, for example.
Did you know that?
In Shark Tale?
I was in Shark Tale.
I was about to slag it off. Go ahead.
I was Katie Curran. I can't even remember her character. I was this hysterical little media fish that went round shouting at everyone to, you know, who's the Will Smith's fish? I can't remember now.
Yeah,
what
it was
anyway.
Called Will Smith's fish, I think.
And I was swimming around with a microphone hysterically shouting at Will Smith all the time. I went into a booth and had to act, which was very, very hard.
Were you good?
No.
Okay.
But it still stayed on there.
Yeah,
anyway.
The film's rubbish. But the problem with the film is that it's on the one hand, it's a kids' movie, but it's got all this stuff about Goodfellas, which is, so it's like, oh, here's the kids, here's the adults, here's the kids, here's the adults. Now, the perfect thing is a movie like Toy Story, in which the same jokes
absolutely
work for the kids and the adults, because they're not nodding. Now, in the case of this, there are nods and winks to the film nerds like me going, House of Wax. And in fact, you're quite right to say, you know, well, how would I have known that? Well, actually, of course, that's a gag for the nerd. So that's me. And oh, I feel...
knowledgeable, I would have said.
No, the nerds is the right way of saying it. And in the case, there's a lot more pointing, there's a lot more exploding. Basically, it works on the level of slapstick. Things explode, things blow up, bridges get. And as is the case with all these CG movies, the computer graphics are done very well. On a script level, it's not a masterpiece. It's not up there with Toy Story. It's not up there with Monsters, Inc., which I think is a real. I mean, I love Monsters, Inc., I've seen it a lot of times.
I liked it better than Monsters, Inc.
Did you?
Enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
I'm not
did
quite li- sure
I did
why,
like but... it. But you did. Did you didn't like Monsters, Inc.?
I liked Bob better in this than I did any of the characters really in Monsters, Inc. I'm not quite sure why.
But your kids thought this was a good romp and they enjoyed it.
Liked it better than Bolt. Fine. Liked it and not as good as Incredibles.
It doesn't surprise me that they liked it better than Bolt, because I think it is a more kid-friendly movie, because basically there's more stuff happening, there's more action, it's more light, it's brighter for one thing. I mean, Bolt is in its colour palette in some is quite a strange movie. And I think I enjoyed it perfectly well. The 3D is done very well, very pointy, but you know, nothing. But it is done sort of technically well. And it's good fun. And coming up over the holidays, it's a good fun thing to see. Can I just say very quickly, we've got almost no time, Race to Witch Mountain, which is a remake of a movie called Escape to Witch Mountain, which I saw when I was a kid.
Yep.
Race to Witch Mountain is actually pretty decent. And don't let the success of Monsters...
And that's out for the Easter holidays,
too. It is out
too.
For Easter holidays, and I thought it was really good fun.
I shall go to that in honour of you. It's been really lovely to meet you.
I can't believe I've met somebody from Shark Tales. And, but I did tell you what I thought.
bad acting. I think Jonathan Ross said something like, oh, bless her. I said it all really.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.